This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ewan Patterson.
Fancy seeing me here.
I know, and Jules Gill.
It's like a shotgun whenever you start these
episodes. Well, the thing is, which the people won't know because this won't be in the edit, is that Jules Gill mouth pops himself to death at the start of every recording, so I have to pick and choose when I'm going to come leaping in.
I am a burpee bandit.
Here's a little bit.
But also, hello.
Yes, hello. This is our 100th episode, so all sorts of things. Basically, we thought we'd do a thing on games you can play for 100 hours or more, which I kind of think it starts to break down in a bunch of different ways, whether it's sort of like narratively, it's something that's going to unfurl across a long time, something like The Witcher 3, something that's like mechanically heavy, something that's arcadey, something maybe that you dip in every day. And it's kind of relevant to the way the industry's at the minute. There's a lot of games as a service, things that want to control your time every single day, daily goals, weekly goals, whatever. So we just kind of came together and threw a whole bunch of games in that are, for the most part, I think all of these are very beloved. They're all very good.
Yeah.
Things that we were going to want to play for 100 hours.
It is strange, isn't it, that we're now in a situation where your time, you can only really dedicate yourself to one game.
they want you to be playing that
one game forever. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was up to them.
It nearly hooked me in the other day with Red Dead Online. It gives you daily challenges, and if you do enough of them, you get a challenge streak. And I was like, oh, and it gives you rewards for doing that. And then I thought, oh, that'll be permanent. And then I didn't do the game one day, and I lost my challenge streak, and I was like, I feel unfulfilled and unwanted.
But it comes into the gameplay loop, doesn't it? Yeah. Like, that's how they do it, because obviously when you're designing a game, your incentive is to hook the players in from start to finish, and that's either through like difficulty spikes, through boss battles, through memorable set pieces, whatever you got to do to get them sticking with it. But it's interesting now that certain developers are seeing that they don't need to do it in the sense of get you in with a complex story. Mm-hmm. They just go, well, here's some daily challenges that are easy and addictive.
Even Crash Team Racing has them now, and one of them is just visit the store every day to see what deal they've got. But I mean, yeah, in terms
because
of that,
it's
like,
a reward, though, isn't it?
Yeah, and I like the idea of having like a daily game. Like, I check into Rocket League and Mortal Kombat 11 like pretty much every day. But it is kind of weird, because if you do dedicate yourself to those games that much, you will just not play anything else. If you play them as much as they want you to, you'd never play anything else. And things like challenge streaks is an interesting thing.
We're going to get to Siege eventually. I didn't play any other game when I was obsessed
We're going to end on Siege, because Ewan's play count for Siege is a hefty number.
I should have gotten the exact figure down, because I remember looking at it and going, dear God.
It's when you sit down and you look at the numbers that you put into certain games and you just think like, oh man, I could have done this.
Language.
Like, somebody was like, put down, I can't remember if it was their Steam library or something like that. They said that all the hours that they put in, and it was a shared account between him and his brother, and he said like, we could have gone to university. Like, in the time that we could have done that, we could have done something
different. It's true. Do you tend to find, because I kind of have this sometimes, where you get a feeling that you have clocked 100 hours in something. I feel like I felt that when I hit it on Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
And I remember checking my hour count on my Switch, and it was 120. And I was like, it feels like I've been in this world for that long. I don't know, there's a certain kind of feel.
It was
to
weird
it.
Because whenever I played loads and loads of games, was when Xbox Live was first like coming on this, well, not first, but when we had the Call of Duty 4s and the Call of Duty 5s and the Halo 3s, and you'd have the leaderboards, it would have your stat, it would measure it by days. Right. So I remember looking at it and going, when you're, well, obviously when you're a an ass when you're a teenager and you're looking at things like, oh, I can't, he's played that game for 5 days, what a sad little weirdo. And I was like, I can't play the game too much because then people will make fun of me, so yeah. I have to keep it at a certain level. And then it, obviously now that I'm an adult, I'm just there like Dorito chips on chest, just like, well, 55 days game time. Yeah,
that does speak to like such a changing of the time, because yeah. like yeah, that was the thing, you don't want to be so dedicated to a game, oh, you nerd, you geek or whatever. But now like the most mainstream titles, your Divisions, your Ghost Recons, your Overwatches or whatever, like encourage massive play times, and they seem to, they gear towards them now. They want to hook you for as long as possible.
Do you know what's really interesting though is thinking of the end game. It doesn't hit you that often. You'll be playing a game for like 100 hours or whatever, and you'll be like, oh, okay, I've got through the hard part, the grind, where it started to not really make sense of why I'm playing this game, and it keeps going and going. And then eventually you'll get to the end game and you'll be like, okay, so I'm maximum leveled, I can't really go anymore, but yet I'm still playing this. What is the point?
Yeah.
And it's when, that's when you get, start to get negative, like diminishing returns on your enjoyment levels, because you're like, I'm just investing time, but I'm doing the same. I'm literally treading water.
Some games do it extremely well. It's weird the amount of people that are completely dedicated to Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which it didn't happen with Assassin's Creed Origins, but the sheer size of Odyssey and the fact they keep supplanting it with DLC, and like that game has daily like weapon resets and things like different quests that you can take on, which like something about that game's combat seems to really resonate with people. Like I have a whole bunch of friends that have put like pretty much close to 1,000 hours into exploring every single nook and cranny to it, which is just kind of ridiculous.
You can look at the, I can't remember which area of the world it is, but they have like houses dedicated to people who only like play StarCraft 2. Is that it? And it's like Vice did like a sort of mini documentary thing on it. And it was, it was like a house where people literally just left school and play solely this one game 24 hours a day, pretty much, or when they wake up, they don't go to work, they literally go to play this game, and they do it so that they can enter these tournaments in esports to win that money. And I'm like, ooh, are you enjoying that game?
And
by this
point? The thing. Like, we'll totally get to some specific examples of games, but like, yeah, in terms of like, you know, forcing yourself to keep playing a thing. I remember reading a report, I think it was also Vice, where this one father was forcing his kid to play Fortnite because he wanted him to try and win this tournament. But it literally meant that the kid was throwing up as he was playing stuff because he wouldn't let him leave to do anything else.
That's just like child abuse.
Yeah, literally.
That's bad.
But it's like that idea that like just being completely dedicated to a game, like where it completely overtakes your life. Like we're talking about 100-hour games, which is crazy, really, when you think about it.
I do wonder if one time I could have gone pro. Yeah.
We will get to your Siege
figure. I decided university was better.
Yeah, I know.
To more articulate your playtime better. So yeah, let's might as well fire through some examples. So the first one that we thought of was Skyrim, which you can kind of apply to any Elder Scrolls. But Skyrim is one of the games that I got it back when my dissertation was on and just lost myself in it.
That is the worst time. I got it when my GCSEs were out and already that was a bit of a risky escapade. Yeah. I was there. Before that, I was, again, back to when you're an arse and you're 15 and you're still going, oh, you're playing that game, it's got dragons, you know, why aren't you playing a real game like Call of Duty?
Was a fun time.
And then basically I found out about it and I got it for Christmas and I was like, I live in this game now. Mm-hmm. I live in it. That's how I am now. I live here.
I am Agnol and the Argonian.
And that game just supplied me with endless stuff because the lore was so rich and the world was so immersive and it encouraged multiple playthroughs where you could role play different things, and it was just, it was an experience that I'd never had in a game before. Mm-hmm. It was like, you can literally live in this thing and try different things, and the main source of satisfaction you get is from living this own personal narrative that you build with your adventures, which is what I take, that's what I mainly look for in games these days now.
But the thing with Skyrim, because I've restarted that so many times, I've finished it as well, but I have gone back over and started over again.
Made a specific save point so you don't have to listen to Ulfric Stormcloak we're doomed.
The first
I'm from Norikstead.
But doing all those like opening bits, I nearly always would pick like a character or a race and then play to that, like with an Argonian. I was like, I want to see what it's like to be an Argonian in the main cities and stuff. But when I finally started, because I got it again on Switch, I have it on everything, and when I finally started it again on Switch I tried to play it like what I would do if I was in Skyrim. So I started like trying to be like more sort of friendly to everybody and try to talk to as many people as possible, trying to do my daily shopping and like or weekly shopping and get stuff in. I don't know how you guys
smith
sort of,
and daggers leather straps
like, oh, I think I could take this quest on, I think I could actually beat this thing, but nothing too big.
But if you want to talk about like biggest wastes of time in an Elder Scrolls game, it's got to be if you were unlucky enough to have Morrowind on the original Xbox, because my god, the loading times between those bits.
That's 100 hours in the loading screens.
I literally remember sitting there just going like, I'm gonna count now. I was like, got to 25 seconds and it was still loading. And I'm like, I've gone in and out of this, like, I think it was like the Fighters Guild area. I was like, I've gone in and out of this room like hundreds of times. Oh my God.
You know what I did to counteract that in Skyrim? I made a matter of not fast traveling. And using the signage to actually travel.
I love that.
Because I thought the coaches were fine. I could travel by coach if there was a coach there, but I never wanted to fast travel because like, well, I want to see the world. And you encounter so many, and it encourages you to do that because not only can you use the real world geography to figure out where you're going, you can encounter missions that you would never have done had you actually tried to do that.
Reading about that, I know Bethesda have like sort of perfected this over time, but that whole Radiant Quest system thing, where like if you just pick a point and walk to it, things will happen to you as you go.
Very
clever. People will come talk to you.
Like, I literally hopped back into it the other month on remastered and I encountered a vampire little conspiracy quest where they were taking people from Riften and farming them, like luring them in with scuba.
Oh, really?
And like because in this playthrough I was like, oh, I'm a grizzled old vampire hunter who's addicted to scuba. I was like, this guy has offered me some scuba, I'm gonna take it. And then I came there and then they were literally farming humans and I busted the dentist. Like, I would never have found that if I just didn't do those things. And that is why Skyrim to me is one of the most satisfying gameplay experiences, and also the thing that I potentially played the most, nearly.
Potentially.
I'll tell you what, if you're really keen on the Skyrim series, there's a guy, and I can't remember what his name is. I know that his real name is Nate, and he does a load of series, which is on like 10 things that you would never find in Skyrim, and he's been doing that series for like 2 years. And it's been, so Skyrim's been out for what?
2011.
It's been out since 2011, and he's still uploading videos with stuff that people have just discovered now. Yeah. Like, he's like, here's a really rare ox head that you can only get in one location. Mm. Like, why is this program?
I remember, speaking to, like, roleplay and stuff, I remember when Skyrim first came out, obviously, like, everyone got used to it, all the arrow and the knee jokes and whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I remember there was a whole video, I think it's still online, about the Skyrim serial killer, where someone was literally living a life of a serial killer in Skyrim, and they had this, it was horrifying, they had this whole house done out with, like, headless corpses at the dinner table.
Wow.
Like, bookshelves with heads on and everything, and I was like, man,
like the
people
Ed
are, like,
Gein. Ed Gein.
Ed Gein, yeah.
Who's Ed Gein?
Oh, he was the guy who was in the 50s. The inspiration behind Leatherface
made furniture out of human bones.
Oh, gosh, there wasn't any of that in Skyrim.
Very charming.
Maybe with the Hearthfire update. But I guess, to round that out, do you guys tend to find, do you tend to play towards a specific role, or do you tend to do, what would I do if I was a fantasy character kind of thing?
You know, it's really hard to say because in so many of these games, I will literally just go with what the tone of the game is at the moment. Like, I could sit down and plan my Fallout character, for example, to be this certain way, but if I'm not feeling it, then I'll just be like, I'm just going to play it. Like, usually see any chance to push the boundaries, I'll do that in video games, because it's a case of a classic case of you can never do it in real life.
I definitely do the thing where I,
you're vampire hunter,
it was the kind of thing where like I always try and tell in my player experience to make sure that it's really super immersive as possible. So that was like when we had the chatty faces the other week, or something like obeying the rules of the law and always like walking
the
and
law.
Then that sort of thing. And so when Skyrim came around, that is literally the ultimate, you can be who you want to be, and I can literally be as specific and niche as I want to in each certain playstyle. So if I wanted to be a big boisterous Nord who wields two-handed weapons and is a companion and he's like kind of like that, I can do that. If I wanted to be a little sneaky little Argonian thief who thieves around and stuff, or I could have a thing where I had to find out logical reasons for why my character would do a certain thing,
that's
which
good.
I kind of really, really enjoyed.
I think that's like a nice little, everyone kind of goes to that anyway when you play something as immersive. You start to make up your own backstory and motivations and everything, which is kind of a nice little carryover from tabletop RPGs where they spell out like exactly
what's
why you're doing something. Which like doesn't get that much play in games like this where you fill out a whole bio chart or whatever, but it's good to have. I think for the sake of flipping to a different example, something that's more like mechanically addictive, we can just talk about first person shooters, although we will get to Siege in a bit. Let's open with Halo, though. I think for me, Halo was the first major console shooter that I just played religiously. Like, all
was it,
day,
was it Halo 2 online?
Halo 2 for me, because it was the first one on Xbox that went online. I know Halo 1 did on PC, but Halo 2 had Blood Gulch and just all the specific levels that are just amazing.
I was actually looking back at Halo 2 as to how it sort of like kept me invested, because me and my friend Liam used to play it like religiously. And I was like, why is that? And I realized it was actually because of the fact that they did the armor pieces. They made it so that you could customize your character with the...
Three.
I think it might have been 3 as well.
The hunt for recon armor. Oh my God, the holy grail of looking cool.
And like eventually if you saw somebody with it, they'd be like, how did you get that? Like literally, how did you get this sort of like flaming skull head that you've got now, or whatever it was. And it's like, I love the fact that customization is definitely a key, is why you will stick with a game for far longer than it would.
Three was such a monumental event. Like, we've talked about it a bunch of times before, but yeah, the armor stuff was just so good.
Three is my happiest gaming memory, I think, discovering Halo 3, because I before that point in time, I'd played Call of Duty and I played some Ghost Recon. I'd met friends through that, and who then introduced me to Halo. So I got it just as ODST came out. So I played ODST, really enjoyed it, and loved the firefight. I loved the idea of like the horde mode stuff. I really had fun playing that and getting to the end with them. And then I actually got into Halo 3, and what I loved about that was that it was a level playing field.
Right,
I never felt at one point in time that my opponent had an advantage over me. It was all, these are the tools that you have at your disposal. It's down to map knowledge, how good you are reflex wise, how accurate you are. Those are your tools that you have to use, and anyone can go into that game and succeed. And the genius of Halo to me not only was the, you know, the community aspects of finding armor and being able to like forge your own maps and custom games and zombies, which are all amazing, but also the idea that I could go into this arena and everyone is on an equal playing field, and if I'm certainly skilled with a certain thing, I can take on people who aren't as good and actually come out and survive and overcome the odds. And I've never had as satisfying a multiplayer experience until Siege came out.
It's interesting, isn't it, that FPS, like, they drill down to a core essence of just like a combative thing, but it's very interesting how differently they approach that concept of I just need to kill you, you need to kill me, sort of thing. Like Call of Duty, for example, goes on that very twitch reactive thing.
Time
the
to kill.
Incredibly quick respawn times allow you to make mistakes but jump back into it. Therefore, it's like a constant level of adrenaline. Then you've got like Battlefield, where you take a long time in some cases. If you run in,
you run for 10 minutes and get shot.
Yeah, exactly. But then there's that sort of satisfaction because you know that the struggle of getting to the firefight, if you kill someone, you're like, ha, I've now imposed that on you. Like,
yeah, that's true. In terms of Battlefield, I do like that. That's the scope and the scale. Like, that's I don't play Battlefield anywhere near as much as COD, and I'm certainly not anywhere near as much as Halo. But there's something about the scale of a Battlefield, like a map or whatever. Like, it does feel like a giant
Bad Company. When 1943 came out for the Xbox Arcade, and then they released Bad Company 2 straight after. Bad Company 2, the squad-based gameplay in that, I'm yet to find a kind of a squad-based multiplayer game. Not obviously Siege is much more close down, and you know, it's almost like Battlefield, but the reverse in a way, not in the sense that it's so totally different, in the sense that it's just Battlefield but condensed into a little tiny little pocket space. It's the same ethos, it's the same guiding principle of you have your team cooperative gameplay rewards success, and you can literally come up with little strategies in that game, being like, okay, if you like get a sniper and you cover us from up there, I'll go in, we'll take that like heavy machine gun in that window, I'll cover you from the back with a shotgun or whatever, and we'll impose damage. And I love the way that you're part of this grand kind of opera, but you're influencing the battlefield in your own little way, which I really, really like.
I think I was going to say, in terms of like with Siege as well, the amount of operators they've put into it, like that idea of like balance being carried through, they've somehow stayed on top of it the vast majority
for
of the time.
Most part. Sometimes there have been things where the meta is always the meta. It's always about the meta.
Because like what you were mentioning with Halo, I had the same exact feel, because like speaking about balance and characters being OP and stuff, obviously those things have always been around. I don't feel like they were like at the forefront of the conversation back in the day. Maybe those games were just easier to balance.
Well,
but
Call of Duty, you look at that and you look at, well, okay, the M16 was overpowered, the MP4 was, there were always there are always weapons in that game, in that franchise, that give people an unfair advantage. Whereas I think with the likes of Halo, your Battlefields, Overwatch, and Siege to a degree, it's all about the tools that you have and how good you are with those tools.
Maybe it's the fact that the developers are now able to go in and tweak the back end to make these fixes all the time. Maybe that's the reason why they've managed to persist for so long. If, say, we were all playing this on the PlayStation 1 or PlayStation 2 or around that era before, like, hot patches could come in, we might have just played it for a few things, been like, this is a bit broken, I'm probably going to leave it.
Maybe.
So the fact that they can constantly tweak it based on the consumer sort of like reaction to it is actually like a huge difference.
It's strange when you think back on it, because like, they didn't have access to as many hot fixes, or like, there was way more procedures they had to do to get a fix to the public. That then had the knock-on effect of making sure that developers put the time in, or the publishers allowed them the time to make something more polished in the first place.
Potentially,
a lot of those goals sort of changed over time. One thing I wanted to mention with Halo, though, especially for Halo 3, I remember when they brought in the equipment that you could put down, the bubble shields and all that kind of stuff. And it was a great video. It kind of speaks to the difference of the way that the attitude of the developers, 343 versus the way Bungie used to approach Halo. There's a great video with Bungie where they show like they literally show them playing the game, and their Warthog's about to like run this guy over, and the guy's talking over it.
This is
the
MP.
He's like, what if I put down an explosive? And he's like, well, I got taken out, but at least I got the guy that was chasing, that was coming at me as well. And it's like, it is all those things where they did think of everything, or at least they tried to put in,
and, you
know.
Like you mentioned the delineation between 343 and Bungie said, I don't want to, like, you know, crap on 343 too much, but Halo 4, you could already see the equal playing field was kind of a little bit not there anymore when they introduced loadouts, and you could choose the exact gun that you were starting with, and that caused issues as well. Whereas before in Halo, everyone starts with the same weapon, you can pick up weapons around the map. This is how it works,
which is like a staple of like arena shooting too. Like, you want to start
and the physics as well. The physics in Halo were meticulous. If you landed a sticky grenade off a gravity elevator,
I love that, just seeing it disappear.
And then like someone gets stuck, and then it's like you hit triple kill, and it's like the voice I've never known as satisfying a thing is when I've killed like a bunch of people, and it goes "Killtacular," and I'm like, hell yeah, Killtacular. That sounds horrid, but yes.
There's something about that physics sensibility, about like, you know, poking and prodding with a sandbox of possibility that like it is just like endlessly playable. I think a lot of more like specific shooters, like, you will engage the player in this way. You'll either hold left trigger and right trigger faster than they will, or whatever. Like, there's, like you said with Siege, like you want to experiment with different loadouts and infiltration options and whatever. There's just more to those games, like, in terms of on a long term. The next one I've got down is Witcher 3, which obviously has some parallels to Skyrim, but I think that it's worth pointing out that Witcher 3's story lasts way longer than something like Skyrim. Like, you'll finish Skyrim and keep going.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
I do feel that The Witcher is like one of the very rare exceptions where it's a narrative game that will keep you invested long. Like I was really struggling to think of any other narrative focused game that I've spent 100 hours in, and I'm really just like drawing a blank, I feel like.
Yeah.
But it's only because of the fact that it's written so well and obviously has a huge source material to base itself off of that really does.
And
really
I think they nail the fact that, like, because it's always that delineation like between, you know, main quest and side quest. Like I always tend to think in open world stuff or anything that's more like free form that I'm like, I'll get the main stuff out the way and then I'll play in the side stuff. But like with The Witcher, I think they did it in such a way where like it makes sense that Geralt would go out and look into these monsters and do these sort of side quests and, you know, dip into a town for a bit or whatever and then get back to the main arc of like trying to track down Ciri.
Yeah.
And so like I think they kind of balance that in a way that maybe something like Skyrim doesn't, where they're like, the apocalypse is happening and we need to stop.
Well, that's
the
interesting thing. Urgency is such an important point. Like that's why I tend to avoid the main quest in Skyrim, because it's like, well, the Dragonborn thing is obviously it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
But what if I wasn't the Dragonborn and I could do my own thing? The Witcher, that's a very good point. Being able to dip in and out of different things is very, very important.
Because that kind of broke Mass Effect 3 for me. Like opening with the end of the world, I was like, well, I need to do everything to save the world immediately. I can't go do anything else. Which like sometimes, like you said, in Skyrim, they're almost anathema. It's like, well, you should quote unquote do the main stuff because you need to stop the dragons. But also you can go live a whole life being a merchant or whatever.
The Fallout 4 is a very good example of the fact that when they say this is the main quest, you need to go do something. And as soon as you get out, you're just kind of like, yeah, but it doesn't seem that.
That's why it doesn't seem that engaging. That's why I really disliked Fallout 4. They gave your character a voice, which kind of completely defeats the whole point of being able to be who you want to be in the wasteland. And the customization options were massively kind of compared to what was on offer in Skyrim. They didn't have much on offer in there, and you know it was kind of like, well, if I have to be this guy, why would he then go and do this and X and Y? Like you're giving me so many options to do this, but you're not giving me a logical reason to actually go and pursue it, which is why I wasn't a fan of that game.
Yeah, and plus in Fallout 4, just you know, straight up story-wise, like your infant child is potentially missing. Obviously, there's a whole reveal later, whatever, but like, you know, like coming out of the, when you've been unfrozen or whatever, why would you do anything other than track down your
child? Sorry, kid, I'm just going to go hook up with the Brotherhood of Steel. Sorry about that. You'll understand. It's fine.
The Minutemen have got another mission for me.
It's almost like when you present a player with such a wide scope of options, it's actually quite numbing. Like, it's you know when your brain tries to think of like an incredibly high number and it gets to a certain thing where it doesn't seem real anymore because it's transcended a tangible...
Like space being infinite.
Yeah, exactly. You just go like, I accept that it is, but I also can't understand
see it.
But it's like that in games now where you just go like, here's funneling for a tiny bit and then suddenly throw you out, push you out of a plane. What are you going to do? You'd be like, I don't know.
It's like, both the last couple of Assassin's Creed and Breath of the Wild has that, where it is like a tutorial area, but it's a miniature open world. You get a little taste of everything that you're going to be able to do, and you sort of exist in this small little island. And then especially in Odyssey and Breath of the Wild, you go off that island and all of a sudden it's like, okay, you have access to everything. Now go and keep going kind of thing.
Do you know what I hate though? This is just a little pet peeve to remind me of. Like, there are actually probably many, many games that we could sit here and list that would take you 100 hours to complete, but it's just because they're filled with busybody work. Like, I take Ghost Recon Wildlands. Like, I had an all right time with that, but I was so put off by the fact that there was just so much to do, and none of it felt like it was a relevant
thing. That was the worst thing about that, because you think about it, Ghost Recon Wildlands is the premise of that game exactly to the nth degree and how it should have been, but Ubisoft just didn't do it in the correct way. There was never a case where you had this massive open world, but you never had the freedom to tailor your experience. It never encouraged you to think tactically. You could win every engagement by just charging in and doing stuff like that. There was never a time where I felt encouraged or I felt like the world was built to sustain the concept that they wanted to get
maybe
with the title
a different
originally.
Loadout. You could have gone a different
way.
Yeah,
exactly.
Whatever,
The amount of times that I was playing in our group and just suddenly going like, oh, somebody's taken out the boss. Yeah. I'm like, oh, well, I wasn't even there. Yeah. Like, I don't even, and it just popped up and you'd be like, successful.
It's like, you are the special forces team in Bolivia. Mm. It's meant to be super realistic. Detection is a thing, but then you don't have, camouflage doesn't influence anything.
Yeah.
You can choose your weapon from an invisible sky portal at any moment in time. It's like, well, if you're going to want to go to commit, you know, and I like games that commit and double down on what they want to achieve, which is again is why Skyrim is so good.
It's totally worth talking about that as well. I mean, we kind of already have, but that idea that like, because Ubisoft have definitely pioneered that, where it's like we have a set of mechanics and we have a massive world. It's as big a map as the disc will allow us to put together, or you know, the file size or whatever, and then just go play. Here's a set of mechanics, go play for X amount of time. And it didn't work with Assassin's Creed Origins, but it did with Odyssey. And I know that Ghost Recon sold extremely well. Wildlands did, even though like for us we kind of bounced off it. Like you realize the limitations of that mechanics and then of those mechanics, and it's like, well, now
which
what?
Is why I'm hopeful that Breakpoint is actually going to be that game, because they are showing, oh, wounds actually have a thing. It's like, well, you actually are doubling down this, you know, semi-realistic military sim almost. Mm-hmm. And you've got camouflage influences stuff. They've gotten rid of the annoying AI as well. And it encourages you to definitely say, if you want the best experience in this game, you're going to have to play it with multiple people. And you know what? I respect that. Even if I can't find friends to play it with, I'll be happy that if they'd rather do that than settle for something less.
Because you think it's like, as a base question, do you think like most people, if they consider themselves gamers or regular game players, are up for a 100-hour experience, be it split across a whole year?
Well, you say that, but you look at people who've racked up hundreds of hours in like Candy Crush. You don't need to be air quotes hardcore gamer to rack up.
That's what I'm saying. Like that idea of like, hours. Yeah, that idea of like 100 hours just being like an accepted playtime. Like we have so many examples. I mean, obviously we've rattled through like quite a few. We had way more, but we're gonna run out of time. Yeah. But point being that like, you know, that sort of length, you compare it to a movie length or reading a book or whatever. 100 hours in a game is a lot.
It's mad when you think about it.
It's more common than you think.
Yeah, I totally think so. I especially think that because of the way that society's headed, where there is much more of an acceptance towards the video game industry as a source of entertainment. It was, like you were saying, when we were growing up, it was kind of like, if you like video games, you were potentially a little bit of an outcast. Maybe less so of the next generation after, but now it's kind of like if you don't game, you're almost like
you're not playing The Division every night. Or you're not going
to
go on FIFA.
It's like the kids that used to bully me and my friends are now the ones that are racking up hundreds of hours on FIFA.
Yeah, like, you know what I mean? Like, I got another example, just something that's just so mechanically addictive. You mentioned XCOM, I totally want to just throw in. Have you played XCOM, Ewan?
It definitely sounds like it's the definition of my shiz, but so I've not played it.
Okay, yet,
so. It has everything I feel that a game that qualifies as a addictive would because it's basically just like massive amounts of customization, huge amounts of choice for the player because you basically decide everything your things do. It's randomized, there's tons of really hard enemies, it's challenging, has a really like as base management stuff in as well, resource management, time management. You're just kind of like,
I love managing things.
It's just one of those you sit there and you go like, this game is like taking a pack of cards and then somebody dragging them slowly across your knuckles again and again, and you're thanking them for it because it is an unadulterated pain. Yeah.
See,
but I'm loving it.
Down a way more positive route, because there's something psychologically pleasing or whatever about it. Like, obviously, loads of games, loads of mobile games go down the whole, you know, like, oh, here's your daily thing. Here's this meter filling up. Here's this reward at the end of it. And there's something about that, about the spinning plates mentality. About if you can keep them all spinning, like, oh, it's pretty satisfying.
There was nothing.
That's what that is.
Nothing more satisfying than finishing Iron Man mode on XCOM 2, which is where basically it's permadeath. So and you can't scum save at all. So when I finally finished it and I only had like maybe two of my original like members left, I sat there just going like, that was a journey. That was a real journey.
We can throw Dark Souls in as well, because for as much as that is like a finite experience, that community has replayed that thing so much with fat rolls. You know, there's so many different ways that you can play that thing, so many different loadouts. Like Rach has gone through it endless amount of times. I think I've lost count of how many times she's restarted it. But that speaks to the sort of mesh of like, you know, narrative exploration, the world design, the lore, like being able to play it. It's so immediately playable.
But what's interesting about Dark Souls as a quick example is that it goes against pretty much every think that a game technically should do in order to
keep
get
you,
it like a game technically should have a fair and balanced difficulty curve. I would argue that Dark Souls does, but it presents the player with like, here is the
difficulty. A couple of times it will just kill you.
You just need to get used to it. The lore should be something that's easily understandable because it gives the player a reason to keep investing in it. But because they're kept at arm's length, it then makes it more intriguing. Like, I don't know how they've
how
done
dare
this.
You be what is your damn fascination with my forbidden closet of mystery?
Yeah, it's like, exactly.
It's like literally, because they didn't work with Demon's Souls, which is very much the same approach, but it totally worked with Dark Souls. And like, they sort of played that weird card and everyone went, well, we will spend hours looking into what the history of Lordran is.
I've read so many sort of articles and seen so many videos arguing that the opening of Dark Souls 1 is the perfect tutorial stage for like, and it's so
the
interesting.
Figuring all the different keys and bosses.
It's so weird, but I love the fact that it's such a pervasive thing in society.
And that's something that's completely unique to the gaming medium. You'll never be able to examine a mythology, put it at arm's length, and expect someone to go and find it. That's kind of incredible.
Like, imagine if I came to you guys now and just said like, hey guys, I've made this amazing game, this amazing lore, and you'd be like, oh wicked, what is it? Well, you're only going to find out bits and pieces on armor and item
only base. if you find certain items, like, I'll tell you who that belonged to, and like, then you might figure out who's the king.
But Jules, why would I want to do that? It's just kind of like, well, I don't know.
I mentioned we did a thing the other day about like sort of like new age mechanics that we want to celebrate, and I mentioned Transistor, because like different armor and weapon, different weapon loadouts give you different parts of the lore, and it like I just love that. I like the idea of like finding different ways to storytell based on active mediums, not necessarily definitely passive ones. We can end on the last couple, and we'll end on Ewan's big lovely statistic for Siege. But until then, we can mention GTA.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Like, I think all of us have got lost in a GTA at some point, whether it, you can even yeah. mention GTA Online
yes,
or whatever.
That's what I was going to say, yeah, actually, because yeah, yeah. I lived in that game for a long period of time. I like living in games, and it was like, you could do, again, you could let you little do little role plays here. And I know yeah. the amount of people I encountered in that game who pretended to be the Joker, and I was also
right,
like,
right.
yep, I'm totally cool with this. Yeah. And because it gave you those tools, you could literally pretend to be the Punisher in that game if you wanted to. You could do so many different things because you had all the emblem creator tool, you had all these different stuff. And obviously, GTA Online, I know it's still going massive, and it still makes loads and loads and loads and loads of money for Rockstar. I do think that the game kind of it lost its appeal when they started pricing people out with a ridiculous level of inflation.
Economy, yeah. Yeah.
And I couldn't enjoy it that way anymore. But when heists were around, when heists were first introduced, there was a nice little golden period of that game where I was like, you know what? This is really fun. I'm having a great time with people. I enjoy all the little random encounters, which is what I'm getting out of Red Dead Online at the moment as well, as it's slowly inching towards the idea.
I think Rockstar are slowly pivoting across. Yeah. Like, I mean, Strauss Zelnick for Take-Two said at some point they do need to end GTA Online. They didn't expect it to go on this long. So at some point they need to. I think it's worth mentioning for GTA Online as well, if you check out Noclip, Danny O'Dwyer's channel, he did a really great documentary about a whole family of people and a community of people who came together who all play online, and they all meet up in the game, and then they started to meet up in real life, and they flew each other out from different countries to meet up, and you can live a whole life in GTA Online if you check in every day.
It's pretty incredible. And Red Dead Online, they're introducing they're taking what GTA Online could have done with the whole business side of it, and they're applying it to different roles. So next month they're introducing you can either be a bounty hunter, a trader, or an adventurer, and you can kind of level up those things and get specific things for that. It's like, that's great. Let people live a life. That is a great idea
loved. It was in the single player, like, and you know, before the first sort of two acts where you're just living as Arthur Morgan, like, you know, looking after the camp, you can do whatever you want. It feels really immersive. Like, that's the stuff I love the most. And like, if you can do that for the online and just live forever in this, you know, chunk of the Old West that they've recreated, it's pretty good.
Maybe that's one of the reasons as why that so many games now are getting this 100 hours of playtime, like your Fortnite or whatever, like, because of the fact that it's against people, and people are an ever-changing challenge. Yeah. You can either make friends with them or you can make enemies with them, depending on it. So maybe it's the fact that there is a readily accessible community in these games that keeps their stability.
And you don't know what's going to happen.
Well, that's the thing.
No.
You can't predict. Again, just to bring up Red Dead, that's the exact thing they're doing right now. You don't appear on the map if you're not hostile. So if you're not hostile, if the only time you actually see a red blip is if someone's been going around killing people, so you know to stay away from them. But you could just be running around.
And see something.
And because the animations are so kind of similar sometimes, it'll only be an odd, like a little specific tale that'll clue you in on someone being another player.
If you made a point of just walking with a crowd of people, then someone else would not even know that's a real
I've gotten
person.
Out of sticky situations that way before. I've gone to a bar and started drinking and they haven't been able to find me, which is really, really
cool. That's really cool. That's the stuff that I feel like they should have had since the beginning.
The unpredictability of it is so addictive. And like, for a good few months I was playing that game every other day, and there was nothing to do with it, nothing to do with it at all. The missions I'd already done, all I was getting out of that was random gang ambushes occasionally seeing what happens if I was interacting with other people in the world.
And I remember I once shot Jules, and then you shot me and then dragged me with a rope across the map on the back of a horse. That was my first experience with Red Dead Online. We can end on a lovely statistic. Ewan, what is the most you've played Rainbow Six Siege?
I think I can't remember the exact, was it like 400 hours or something?
I thought it was close to a couple of thousand.
Well, I don't even know. I will find the actual statistic and I'll put it in the comments of this video, but it was ridiculous. I played that game start of my second year of uni with my friends. It was on offer for like 20 quid or something that, and we just played it and we got ridiculously good at it. But the thing with Siege is, if you leave it alone for about a month, you'll come back and you'll be completely punished.
Everything's changed.
So it's the most gratifying game that you can play, but also if you leave it alone just for a little bit, you're back to square root.
On it like pretty much every day. Jules, do you have a statistic off the top of your head for a game that you've played a hell of a lot?
The game that I played probably the most is probably a single game. Is DayZ, and I regret it.
What's your number?
I believe it's like 196 hours.
I thought it was going to be a lot.
I know, but then again, I don't commit to like games for that long unless they've really hooked
me. I pretty much played The Witcher 3 all of 2015, and I'm on 620.
Whoa.
So that's my thing. Although I did read since putting that out, I said this in another video a while, ages ago. That apparently the in-game statistic that counts your numbers apparently got bugged with one of the patches. So maybe it's less, maybe it's more. Right, I don't know. But yeah, but for now though, these have been a whole collection of games that you can play for over 100 hours. Let us know your favorites down in the comments below. This has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Ewan Patterson.
Hello and goodbye.
And Jules Gill.
Before we go, I just want to say one thing. Thank you so much, Scott, for organizing this. This is 100 episodes in.
I didn't think of doing that. That's really wholesome.
Honestly,
it's really
nice. Been an absolute pleasure to watch you being able to like grow into this role and bring this channel the successes that it's had.
Anytime, buddy. Thanks to everybody, every single person for the rest of the office that's been in. Thank you. And thanks to all you guys as well. But yeah, we'll catch you next time on episode 101.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.